Once upon a time, in an age of forests and firelights, our ancestors were wise to the spectrum of human identity. Among the fairy tales and myths they told were stories of glass coffins and marble statues, eunuchs and androgynes, chaste marriages and bodily transformations, symbolic stories that hint at other identities, tales of asexuality. This is the Asexual Fairy Tales Podcast, and I'm your storyteller, Elizabeth Hopkinson. Each month, I'll be reading you another story from my books of asexual fairy tales. Some of these are old tales of myth and legend, in which I first found representation for my asexual identity. Others are original stories by me, based on traditional motifs. It's a personal selection, but I hope you find something in it that speaks to you too. So, sit back, if you are able, relax, and enjoy another asexual fairy tale. Hello, and welcome back to the Asexual Fairy Tales podcast. Thank you so much to everyone who's joined us so far, and to everyone who's bought the books. I did some sales figures yesterday and found out that, taking all three books together, they've sold over 3,500 copies between them, and book one has sold over 2,000. So if you're thinking of getting someone for a Christmas present, you can always add to that number, click on the link in the description box, which will take you to the sales page. This month I thought I'd bring you a short, festive story and one of my favourites, The Ice Queen and the Mer-King. I wrote this story at a time when I was struggling to understand my identity and put it into words. The language of fairy tales seemed the most natural to use. I have always been drawn to women in towers stories. The tower can represent so many things. Inviolate self-protection, social anxiety, frustration, lack of choice. As a teenager, I felt a great affinity with the heroine of Alfred Lord Tennyson's The Lady of Shalott, and we used to have the picture of it on the wall in our English department. The lady of the poem is unable to leave her tower, engaging only with the outside world through a magic mirror. When she feels the stirrings of unrequited love for Sir Lancelot, and dares to look at him directly, a curse comes upon her and she dies. Another poem I've always found to be deeply moving is Matthew Arnold's The Forsaken Merman, which is inspired by the Scandinavian folktale Agneta and the Sea King. The merman in the poem is represented as a tragic, romantic hero, mourning the desertion of his human wife, who left lonely forever the kings of the sea. This tale that I'm about to read combines imagery from both those poems. It first appeared in New Fairy Tales in February 2009. There was once, so the story goes, a king who subdued the surrounding nations with the might of his sword, and all feared him. And when he had conquered the nations to the west and the south, he made war upon the Icemen, who ruled the frozen wasteland to the north, beyond the mountains. Then there was battle on the plains of ice for many days. But the soldiers of the warrior king outnumbered the Icemen with their sparkling javelins, and the plains fell. For a prize of war, the king from the south demanded the elder daughter of the Ice Prince for his wife. He carried her away captive to his home among the heathlands and the rushing rivers, and made her his queen. Never in all his days had the king seen such a rare beauty as the Ice Princess from the frozen waste. Her skin shone and glittered in the sun. Some say the sun shone right through it, leaving rainbows in every room through which she passed. Her eyes were as blue as the clear sky on a January morning, and each delicate strand of her flowing hair was made from a single icicle. Too rare and too delicate was the new queen for the palace of the king within his fortified city. He could not regale her in the mighty feast hall of his father's, where the trophies of war hung above the great fireplace, and unspeakable desires burned in the eyes of his warriors and chieftains. He could not promenade her in the scented gardens, where the daughters of the ancient houses whispered behind the trellises, and the jealous sun winked maliciously from behind the clouds. So the king took his queen of ice and locked her in the upper room of a tower. It stood on an island in a coastal bay, where the great river flowing from the mountains met the dark and changeable sea. Here she remained, looking out from her window at night, as the waves crashed and tumbled, singing a lament in the cold, chiming tongue of her people. Her breath, as she sang, was like clouds of snowflakes falling in a mist. It fell slowly to meet the restless surface of the sea, each flake for one moment a glistening star, before it was gone forever. Each week, the king would unlock the door of the queen's chamber with an iron key and bring her down to the room beneath her own, a cold room with gloomy tapestries and a panelled bed. There he would embrace her roughly, and with each embrace, one icicle strand of the queen's hair would break off and fall to the ground with a crash. When the king was gone, the queen, returning to her chamber, would weep and mourn the breaking of her delicate hair, shedding hailstone tears. These too would fall into the night, and the wind would carry them away into the heart of the sea. Now, beneath the waves that roared about the island lay the kingdom of the merfolk. For long centuries beyond the accounting of men, they had ruled the ocean depths. But unlike the king above the surface were they, because they ruled with equity and not by the sword. Although their king wielded the trident, and the power of the waves was at his command, he used it but seldom. He took counsel among the lords of the merfolk, and understood the ways of the many creatures that swim the unseen depths, and the pulse of the ocean was the beating of his own heart. So it happened that as the merfolk feasted at night upon thrones of pearl, and shared the fellowship cup together in their coral gardens, they looked far above them and saw the glittering of stars. It seemed to them that there were constellations in the heavens. Each star gleamed for one moment, and then went dark as another appeared, as unlike the first as it was unlike the next. Magical and mysterious to the lords of the sea were the stars that were the breath of the Ice Queen. It happened also that, as they swam in clear lagoons beyond the knowledge of mariners, pearls fell softly through the sea towards them, no bigger than the scales of the tiniest fish. But when they tried to touch the pearls that were the Ice Queen's tears, they melted in their hands. And the King of the Merfolk declared that they should all swim up to the surface to see what these marvels were that came to them from the world of air. So they rose together at night upon the back of a wave, singing their haunting songs. There, in the window of the tower, they saw the Ice Queen, with her clear blue eyes, weeping into the night. The queen looked through her tears and beheld the merfolk riding the waves, and their hair blowing about them in the windy night. She lifted up her voice and sang mournfully, in the chiming tongue she had learned beyond the mountains. Then the merfolk were glad, for they saw again those stars beneath the stars that had glittered on the surface of the sea. But the deep green eyes of their king were thoughtful and sad. Long into the night the Ice Queen and the merfolk sang together in a strange and mysterious harmony. At last, at the first light of day, showing pale upon the mountain tops, the merfolk turned and dived into the sea with the splashing of their powerful tails. From that night onwards, the lords of the sea would rise often from their thrones to sing with the Ice Queen. All along the rocks they would sit, the jewels of the ocean gleaming wet on their blue-green breasts. And from high in the window, the snowflakes of the Ice Queen's breath would flutter around their heads. All the while, the deep green eyes of the Merking were fixed on the lonely Ice Queen. with her rainbow white skin and her beautiful broken hair. So it came to be that the King of the Sea conceived in his heart a love for the Queen in the Tower, and she, looking down at his noble face, wise with the changeable mysteries of the sea, also felt the pangs of love for the very first time. At that time, their love was a secret, locked deep in the heart of each. The silence between them could not be broken, for the language of the Ice Queen was as strange to the merfolk as theirs was to her. But as one night gave way to another, so they gradually came to understand one another and to speak as well as to sing together. The Ice Queen told the merpeople of her home in the frozen north, at the glittering palaces of crystal with many turrets, and the sleighs drawn by white reindeer that once carried her through frozen forests of silver glass. She told of the battle with the king from the south, and how he had carried her away far from her home and all she loved, and the tiny pearls of her hailstone tears rained into the ocean. The Merking told her of the gardens beneath the sea, where fish of a thousand colours swim through endless grasses. He told her of the hearts of those who rule the sea, which are gentle and loving towards the tiniest creature that floats there. And beneath the moon and the stars, their talk became ever more tender. Now the Queen dreaded more than ever the turning of the Iron Key, and she wept more bitterly at the roughness that broke the icicle strands of her hair. Each time the King summoned her downstairs, she feared that he would see the heart of the ocean beginning to creep into her blue eyes. All that consoled her was the coming of the night and the pounding of the waves. Then one day, when she felt she could endure no more, the King did not appear at his appointed hour. Instead, the squire who held his horse came to tell her that the King had fallen in battle to the warlike princes of the scattered isles, and would visit her no more. Then the iron lock was broken, and the Queen walked for the first time on the grass and rocks of the island, and sang a song of freedom that swirled in frosty clouds about her. The song of the Ice Queen pierced the sea and came to the ears of those who sat on thrones of pearl. That night, the Merking rose from his ocean kingdom alone, and his wave lashed at the rock like thunder. In his hand he held a necklace of coral with a jewel that glowed with every colour under the sea. He held it out to the Ice Queen with words of love, and humbly begged that she would come back with him to the kingdom of the merfolk and sit beside him for ever. Now the heart of the Ice Queen was filled with pain. She said to the Merking, "I love you more than all the crystals of the silver forest, but in your kingdom I should dissolve away to nothingness. Where you swim, I cannot follow, except in my heart." And though the salt of the ocean came to the Merking's eyes, he knew that it was true. "Then let me take you to your father," he said. "We shall make for you a carriage pulled by rays, and bring you to the foot of the snowy mountains." "No," said the Ice Queen, "I cannot now return to my father's house, with my hair snapped and broken, and the heart of the ocean in my eyes. I shall remain here on this island, and this tower, once my prison, shall become my home. I shall weave from the grass and the seaweed new tapestries, that the generations to come may not forget me." Then the Merking delicately kissed the hand of the Ice Queen and dived back into the sea. The necklace of coral he lay in a pool on the rock, and the Queen picked it up and put it around her neck. It melted a small patch over her heart, for it was wet with the sea, but she never removed it. Every day, for as long as she lived, she wove tapestries for the walls of her tower, and every night she would stand on the rocks and sing, and mariners would see from far off the mingling of the snowflakes with the spray, which was the love of the Ice Queen for the Merking. you for listening to Asexual Fairy Tales. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider subscribing to the podcast. If you really enjoyed it and want to buy me a coffee, you can do that at ko-fi.com/ElizabethHopkinson48513. Don't forget you can follow me on Twitter at @hidden_grove. Or go to my website, elizabethhopkinson.uk, where you'll find links to all my books. All the links are in the episode description. I really appreciate all your support. Stay safe and keep reading.